Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, March 7th, 2014. Goodness, the week has gone so quickly. The year is well underway. Hopefully winter about to disappear before too long. It's been brutal, and we are about to leap forward this weekend. So don't forget to mess around with that clock and lose an hour of sleep just so we need it in addition to everything else, unless, of course, you're in certain places like Arizona where they ignore this little ritual that we go through twice a year of moving the clock backwards and forwards. It sounds like Congress, backwards and forwards, the perennial metronomes of America. They're to the left, to the right, and back again, and where it stops, nobody knows. I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Those of you who are regular listeners know that. And you know that generally my primary focus has been and will continue to be national security, especially when we talk about immigration, border security, and the other components of that immigration system, dysfunctional as it is, and the real impact that this has on America and Americans. Again, those of you who are familiar with me know that I am and have been for a number of years a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to be, and boy, this winter I certainly would rather have been there than here, but so be it. They're on the West Coast, or as they like to say, the Left Coast, and here I am on the New York side, the East Coast, and it's a pleasure working with them, being able to provide my articles for their website along with a bunch of other folks who have areas of concern and expertise, but my contribution to that website are my commentaries on the immigration crisis that is having such a profound impact on America and Americans, and let's face it, I mean, we are hammering so many issues because are getting hammered because most of the components of the immigration system are not working. And, you know, back and forth goes the debate about comprehensive reform, and we'll get to that in a moment, and we'll get to what John Boehner, goodness gracious, has once again had to say. But I also want to remind you that in addition to going to the terrific capsweb.org website, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, please go to my own website, michaelcutler.net. You know, recently, in fact, CAPS, before I move off the issue about what they're doing at CAPS, they recently did a whole series of articles and the impact of illegal alien workforce on American workers and, in particular, America's minority workforce. I mean, this is what's so astonishing to me. The unemployment rate went up by 0.1%. You know, according to the official statistics, we're now at 6.7%. I mean, if you believe these numbers, boy, have I got a fence to sell you. And even though they're claiming that they created, I think it was 175,000 new jobs this month, but what nobody talks about are that most of those jobs are very low-paying, they're minimum wage, maybe they're part-time, maybe they're seasonal, and that we're bringing in more foreign workers each month than the number of new jobs we're creating. It's all a fantasy. This is about blue smoke and mirrors, and we're seeing it from both sides of the aisle, but I have to tell you, this administration has the biggest blue smoke machine that I've ever witnessed, that I've ever heard of. I mean, it's just absolutely astonishing. I just taped an interview for a new startup network, the One America News Network, and we were talking about, you know, Obama saying, well, if we pass comprehensive reform, then jobs will be created and America will do well. How in the world will jobs be created? How will it help the economy if right now between $100 to $200 billion a year, that's with a B, billion, are being wired out of the United States by foreign workers? If more foreign workers worked in America, more money would be wired out of the United States. That's not just my supposition. It's what the UN and the World Bank have said in reports that appear on their websites. If you take millions of illegal aliens and give them lawful status so they will no longer be exploited, that's the good news. The bad news, more money gets wired out of the country, and they will displace more American workers. I want American workers to get the jobs. I want foreign workers who should not be here because they violated our laws to go home. I don't want anybody exploited. That's horrific. That's horrible. And that's why we're in this mess, because too many people are thrilled at the prospect of exploiting fellow human beings, and the easiest people to exploit are illegal aliens. I don't want the illegals here. I want the exploitation to end, and I want people who go to work each day to be paid a living wage. And the way you begin doing that process is by securing the borders and enforcing the immigration laws. These are the points that I've been hammering away at. CAPS has done a bunch of articles about this. I write about it. There are other folks who write about this and other aspects to the situation of California. And you know they are in a mess. And they're in a mess in large measure because they refuse to take the immigration law seriously. They've created a sanctuary state. New York is no better. And there's a price to be paid for that madness. That's why I write for them. That's why I'm happy to work with them. And that's why I do this radio program, to try to highlight what's wrong, to provide the perspectives that aren't just idle speculation that I've acquired, because I've been in the trenches for 30 years. I've been involved with the immigration issue for over 42 years. I mean, it's kind of scary. I look at the gray hair, and I think, gosh, who is that old guy? And I realize it's me. Very funny story. One day I did a congressional hearing, and I went online looking for the link to the hearing, because I know that they had posted it. And as I'm looking at this hearing startup, you see the witnesses with their backs to the camera, and the camera was facing the dais, you know, where all the members of Congress sit, the chairman and so forth, and they're sitting up there. And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking, Jay, I guess this is the wrong hearing. It says it's the hearing I testified at, but who is that guy with all that gray and white hair and that big bald spot? I thought I sat in that chair. And a true story. And then I realized it was my own head that I was looking at, and I had forgotten how gray and white and how big my bald spot had gotten. Gray and white hair and big bald spot. That's me. So, but anyway, that said, I have a lot of mileage on this motor here that I call my life experience, and much of it dedicated to the enforcement and administration of the immigration laws. So think of me as the Mythbuster. I'm here to be able to try to provide you not just with an opinion, but with opinions that are born of many years of experience. And that's really what's so vital, because although most people seem to think immigration is a relatively minor issue, in my judgment, and not because it's quote-unquote my issue, but because I understand it better than most, I would argue that the immigration crisis, and believe me, it is a crisis, provides some of the most serious existential threats to the United States and to our citizens. You know, people have said, let's get the military on the border. Well, I'm going to tell you something that you may not have thought of before. But the military already is on the border, but they are on the border externally, because the job of all five of our branches of the military are dedicated to a primary mission, that being keeping America's enemies as far from her shores and borders as possible. So they do border security, but externally, to keep the bad guys away at arm's length or greater. The job of DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, or as I have come to refer to it, the Department of Homeland Surrender, their job is to deal with that threat when it gets up close and in person. And you know, when we hear this nonsense, and I'm looking right now as I'm speaking to you, March 3rd, Huffington Post posted a report. And here's the title, John Boehner, Immigration Principles Are Not Amnesty. You know, this hang-up on what do we call it is remarkable. You know, I remember when I was a kid, if someone had cancer, they wouldn't want to use the word cancer, so they called it anything you could have imagined, but dear God, don't ever say the person has cancer. It's that the word was so terrible, so horrifying, that people found other words to use to describe that dreadful disease. Here, we're being told that this toxic word of amnesty is what would make it bad. If it wasn't called amnesty, Well, there was a guy by the name of William Shakespeare who said that a rose by any other name would smell as sweet, or in this case, as foul. Here's the point. We have a prescribed way that foreign nationals, also known as aliens, and then there's another great example of Orwellian newspeak. This isn't about being politically correct. You know, when I give speeches out there, people say, well, we're too damn politically correct in America. No, I don't think you can be too politically correct if the goal of being politically correct is not to insult or demean or humiliate another human being. You know, you look at the N-word. It's one of the most foul and vile terms I could imagine. That word disturbs me far more than the F word or any other word, because you are insulting a person on a very personal level, attacking them for something over which they have no control and for nothing that they did wrong. You know, whether it's the N word or any other discriminatory term for any other race, religion, ethnicity, if you want to dislike somebody, you can dislike them for who they are as a person, but never because of their race, religion, or ethnicity. So if by being politically correct, the goal is to not do that to somebody, then I believe in it 100%. But the use of language where immigration is concerned, people will say, well, it's about being politically correct, and that's not true. It's about being Orwellian. You know, think of 1984 and Newspeak. The term alien is not an insult. It simply means any person not a citizen or national of the United States. It's a statement of fact. It's a statement of law. And when Americans go to other countries, guess what? We become aliens. And it's not an insult. It simply means that you are physically present in a country in which you are neither a citizen nor a national. No insult there. Statement of fact. But the problem with that statement of fact is that it provides clarity to the discussion. This is kind of like the business about defining the definition of the word is. You know, what does is mean? Well, what does amnesty mean? What does alien mean? The idea that millions of people evade the inspections process, and then the open borders crowd, and I have a term that I think is far more fitting for those folks. I call them the immigration anarchists, because what they're really seeking is to achieve anarchy where immigration is concerned. So the immigration anarchists are out there saying, well, these poor people are simply undocumented. Now, undocumented makes it sound as though they left their paper at home. You know, undocumented worker, undocumented immigrant. That game of names, semantics, started with Jimmy Carter back when he was president. We all suffered under that lunacy. I was an agent back then. You know, we're not going to use the term illegal alien. Really? Why not? Because it provided clarity. So this business about, well, we're not going to use the term alien is silly. Actually, it's insidious, because it confuses people. So that way they can say, well, they're undocumented immigrants, and if people want those laws enforced, then they're anti-immigrant. And so the news media quickly jumped on that concept, and they pitted two camps against each other, the pro-immigrants versus the anti-immigrants. Very clever, very clever. Think about the raging debate issue, and lots of people feel very strongly on both sides of that issue, and I'm not going to get into that issue this evening. But just look at the language. One side is pro-choice, the other one is pro-life, because they understand that when you become anti-anything, you're in the defensive posture, and it makes it difficult to win. The military always wants to seize the high ground. You know, in Israel, the big deal, the strategic advantage comes from capturing the Golan Heights. If you're looking down on your enemy, you have an advantage. In debate, the high ground, the unfair advantage, if you will, goes to whoever can seize the language of the discussion. And that's what this is about, seizing the language and defining your opponent. And once you define your opponent, it has devastating implications. So they turn around and say, well, those people that want to secure the borders, they're anti-immigrant. They don't like immigrants. They want the laws enforced because they don't like immigrants. So I'm going to tell you something that you've probably never heard anywhere else. Those immigration laws are all contained within a big volume known as the Immigration and Nationality Act. Most of them are under what is known as Title 8 of the United States Code. Go to capsweb.org, go to michaelcutler.net, you'll read the articles, and you'll see links to various sections of the immigration laws. Those immigration laws aren't only about deporting people, aren't only about sending people home. Those laws also provide for the lawful admission of more than 1 million legal immigrants into the United States each and every year. These are foreign nationals who are given a green card that signifies that they have lawful immigrant status, and they are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. That's provided for in those immigration laws that I want to see enforced, that the pro-enforcement people want to see enforced. Is it anti-immigrant to admit or over a million lawful immigrants and put them on a path to citizenship? Another provision under the immigration laws is to provide political asylum to people who are at risk. Of course, that system, just like the citizenship system, has a flaw, and the flaw is fraud, that there are lies being perpetrated in the applications, and very often those lies go unnoticed, undetected, unpunished, and people become citizens, or they get political asylum, or they become resident aliens, based on lies that go undetected because there are no resources to make certain that the immigration system has integrity. But again, the point is that the letter of the law says that there is a provision in place whereby an alien claiming political asylum, credible fear, can be allowed to remain in the United States and ultimately become a citizen, potentially. It's in those laws that I want to see enforced, that the people that want secure borders want to see enforced. It's not anti-immigrant. That is the lie. That is the smear campaign, if you will, being perpetrated by the immigration anarchists. And most people don't know what's in the law, so they say, wow, they just don't like immigrants, those folks. Not true. But we want the system to work. And the purpose for those laws that we're talking about is very simple. It's about keeping people out of this country, aliens now, folks, because we cannot under any circumstances deny an American citizen entry into the United States. So those laws are about keeping out of our country those aliens, those foreign nationals, who would pose a threat to the safety and well-being of America or Americans. And if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and I don't expect you to sit there taking notes, this isn't law class, this is Friday night, and we're trying to catch up on the crazy stuff that's been happening all week. But if you go look at that section of law, it lists who we're supposed to keep out. And when you listen to this list, I want you to think to yourself, is there anybody on that list that I'd be happy if they moved in next door? Let's start out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, perhaps resistant tuberculosis, perhaps dengue fever, perhaps some other awful disease. That's why one of the requirements before someone can legally enter the United States is that they don't have a dangerous communicable disease. We hear so much about Ellis Island. Oh, my God, they closed Ellis Island. Ellis Island, folks, was a quarantine station. It was run by immigration in conjunction with public health. And if people showed up suffering from a disease, smallpox, tuberculosis, whatever, they were not allowed in. That's why Ellis Island was built on an island, and the only way to get from the island to mainland United States, mainland New York, was on a boat, and that boat was run by the Immigration Service and Public Health. So if they didn't want you getting to the United States, guess what? You weren't getting here. So this nonsense, well, they closed Ellis Island. We have international airports in virtually every state. So they serve the same purpose, but we are far more soft on immigration than they were when Ellis Island was in full swing. So when you hear the nonsense about Ellis Island, it's just that. It's nonsense. So we start out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are seriously mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders. That, again, goes back to Ellis Island, because they made sure that if you appeared to suffer mental illness, you weren't getting on that boat to come to the mainland. Now, we get from there to aliens who've been previously deported, aliens who are convicted felons, gang members, gun runners, money launderers, people that were running prostitution rings, people who might be fugitives from justice in other countries, aliens who are spies or terrorists or, in the jargon of the Second World War, saboteurs. Today we call them terrorists. Human rights violators, war criminals, these are categories of aliens who are supposed to be kept out of the United States. And then, of course, we get to the final two categories of aliens who might become a public charge, meaning they would not have the wherewithal to support themselves. They came with no money. There's no one to take care of them. So they wind up where we, the people, the government, would have to pay for their subsistence. And so the law says, no, you should not come here and be a burden on our economy, on our government, on our people. And that makes sense. And finally, and this goes back to the fact that the Labor Department used to run immigration, by the way, not the Justice Department, and that was before the creation of DHS, and now, of course, the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I've come to call it, is responsible for enforcing and administering the immigration laws. And so this business about the Labor Department was how we built the middle class, because the final category of aliens are those aliens who would come to the United States and seek to work on a job that would displace an American or that would drive down wages and or working conditions for Americans who would be similarly employed. It's about protecting American workers and their jobs and their families. That's what's in the law. There's nothing in the law about race, religion, ethnicity. It doesn't talk about people from Mexico or people from Spain or people from China or people from... No, our immigration laws are totally blind as to those factors. Of those groups of people that I just enumerated, who would you be thrilled to see come through the door and move into the house next door to you? The point is, those laws are common sense. The point is that for the first 4 years of my career, when I sat in that inspections booth at Kennedy Airport, in a manner of speaking, you could say that I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door, as do all of those inspectors who work for Customs and Border Protection these days. It's about keeping out the aliens who pose a threat to our safety and well-being. But what we're being told is that these folks are undocumented. They are missing that little piece of paper. It's like the kid going to the bathroom in school and he forgot the hall pass. No big deal. Somebody give that kid a hall pass. Well, that's not the truth. It sounds kind of interesting. Well, just a piece of paper. I mean, how much could a piece of paper be worth? Well, I want you to think about something. Imagine the guy who practices medicine without a license. Imagine the guy who would fly an airplane without a license or drive a car without a license and kill people. See, the problem with people that lack that magic piece of paper isn't the piece of paper, it's how they got here. If they came here, quote-unquote, undocumented, it means two things. Number one, they are unable to provide official documentation, reliable documentation that attests to their true identity. And in an era where we worry about terrorism, and if you don't think we're worrying about terrorism, go try to take an airplane flight and see how worried we are about terrorism. If you don't think we're not worried about terrorism, look at what's been going on with the NSA and their bugging program. So you look at this war on terror, you look at those soldiers that we sent to the Middle East to fight Al-Qaeda, to take down bin Laden, to protect America from those terrorist organizations. We are engaged in a life and death struggle with terrorist organizations, and the idea that foreign nationals could enter the United States without being able to attest to their true identity is a threat to national security. See, the problem isn't that these folks lack a piece of paper and it's just about a piece of paper. This is not a formality. What they lack more than that piece of paper, ladies and gentlemen, is they lack the authority to be here. And it's funny because I used to do a lot of these so-called food fights on these news programs, whether it was at Fox or MSNBC or CNN, and you'd go on and have a debate, and they would say, well, these people are undocumented. And I raised the issue that if they're undocumented, we can't prove who they are, so we should be very concerned. And suddenly a new word was used, well, they're unauthorized. Again, let's make it sound innocuous. Unauthorized sounds as though we're playing the game as Simon says, and Simon didn't say, so you're out of the game. This is not trivial, because the inspections process, again, I remind you, is supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists, among others, who pose a threat to our safety and well-being. So when someone sneaks into the United States, they do so for only one reason, because they know that because of something in their background, they could not be legally admitted into the United States. Perhaps they are known international terrorists. Perhaps they are convicted felons. perhaps they are involved with espionage. There's a whole bunch of reasons why people would sneak into the country. And I know that some of you are going to say, well, the 9/11 terrorists didn't sneak in, and that's true, but they got lots of false ID. 19 terrorists in the aggregate used more than 300 false identities. But a method of entry is to enter without inspection. And by the way, that is the term that we used when I was an INS agent, EWI, entrant without inspection. And therein lies the threat to our well-being. Now, what you also should know is that we were told, and they've kind of stopped saying it because I've been pushing back against this, it's not a crime to run the border. Well, if you run the border for the first time, the worst you're looking at is a few months in jail. Not considered a felony, it's more an administrative offense, a misdemeanor. But if you have previously entered the United States illegally and you do so subsequently, the penalty is a 2-year jail sentence. If you were deported and come back after formal deportation without permission, again, that's a 2-year felony. But if you were deported because you are what is known as an aggravated felon, you're a drug dealer, or you committed murder, or you committed rape, you're looking at 20 years in jail for unlawful reentry. I'm very familiar with that statute. I had the privilege of working with New York's then-Senator Alphonse D'Amato back in the early 80s, and we got that law changed so that it would, in fact, become a 20-year maximum penalty for unlawful reentry for criminal aliens. So these are serious crimes. And when people can say, well, they're here, what are we going to do about it? I want to scream. So now you've got John Boehner, and he's arguing whether or not this is really amnesty to give illegal aliens lawful status and an identity document. So let me read this quote to you, and this is from the Huffington Post, March 3rd edition this year, just a couple days ago. And so it starts out this way, the article. House Speaker John Boehner, Republican Ohio, flatly rejected on Monday the idea that his proposed immigration reform are amnesty. I guess it should be is amnesty, but okay. A word that's considered the kiss of death among Republicans for passing a bill. Some want to call it amnesty, Boehner said in an interview with the Cincinnati Inquirer. I reject that premise. If you come in and plead guilty and pay a fine, that's not amnesty. House Republican leadership put forward a set of principles in January for immigration reform, including a contentious proposal that would allow undocumented immigrants to stay in the United States and eventually gain legal status if they meet certain criteria. It didn't say they would eventually become citizens, although it did not say that it would ban them either, and gave them a long list of requirements for them to stay. The proposal states that the undocumented immigrants wouldn't receive a special path to citizenship, but could, quote, legally live and without fear in the United States, but only if they were willing to admit their culpability, pass rigorous background checks, pay significant fines and back taxes, develop proficiency in English and American civics, and be able to support themselves and their families without access to public benefits. Half of what is said about that in that statement are lies. Public benefits. Really? Well, you go to New York City, you're an illegal alien. We have a mayor who wants to provide illegal aliens with official identity documents, even though they can't verify who they are. They shield them from detection by the police officers, and it's not just the Democrats. Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, maintained the sanctuary policies of his predecessor, and at least in one case, it cost the life of a police officer. An individual by the name of Ronaldo Rayside, I believe he was a citizen of Panama, a drug dealer who had lost his green card because of his drug convictions. We deported him. He came back illegally, and I was the guy who put this piece of garbage on an airplane. And he came back and was twice arrested by the NYPD, but they were restricted from notifying immigration that they had arrested this guy. Because if they had notified immigration in those days, in the 1980s, I guarantee you we would have arrested him and put him in jail and prosecuted him for unlawful reentry. This was a convicted drug dealer. But Rudy Giuliani said, don't you go talking to those nasty immigration people. So on the third occasion, Ronaldo Rayside gets stopped by a 24-year-old cop and by the name of Robert Machete. And he goes for Machete's gun. Machete was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force. I had the privilege of working with those guys for years as an immigration agent here in New York City. He goes for Officer Machete's gun. The bullets fly, and Officer Machete is killed on a street corner in Brooklyn. I testified at the murder trial. I met the daughter he never had the pleasure of knowing because his wife was pregnant with that little baby when he was killed. If Giuliani's policies had not prohibited the NYPD from contacting immigration, this wouldn't have happened. I have a good friend, Don Rosenberg, whose son was killed in California by an illegal alien. Here on so-called temporary protected status from El Salvador, immigration never wanted to be clear about what his status was, and he runs Don's son over. Don's son is riding a motorcycle. He's a 25-year-old law student paying his own way through college to live a little bit more economically. Rather than drive a car, he drives a motorcycle, and this guy runs him over. First, he hits him, and according to witnesses, the initial impact didn't do much harm, if any, to him, but in trying to flee, he runs this kid over and kills him with his car. And he was never even criminally charged. This is the kind of madness we're talking about. It's both sides of the political aisle. It's remarkable that John Boehner says, well, they're going to make them pass a rigorous background check. What is his definition of rigorous? See, we not only have to define the word amnesty, I want John Boehner and those people who support John Boehner, every member of the Congress, to tell me what a rigorous background check, how rigorous is rigorous? When Snowden did what he did, and we could have that debate another day, in my judgment, Snowden is a traitor. Whether or not the NSA overstepped its bounds, and I think they did, that's a separate story. The way that he proceeded to take that material with him to Russia, to our adversaries, and boy, if you don't think they're our adversaries, look at what's happening in the Ukraine right now, ladies and gentlemen. And you had people screaming, Claire McCaskill, liberal Democrat senator, oh, they didn't do a proper background check on Snowden. They didn't do a proper background check on the Navy Yard shooter. This has serious implications. Well, she's right. But at least they had actual investigations done. Do you know that under comprehensive immigration reform, they would not have the capacity to do any face-to-face interviews? They would not have any capacity to go out and knock on doors and conduct field investigations? All they're going to do is play connect the dots with applications. The alien will mail in an application, and if every box is properly checked off and all the little pieces of paper are attached, and they give that check that they're supposedly going to have to pay, and God knows they'll probably waive the fees anyway, they're going to get themselves an identity document that may or may not really reflect their true identities. This is so stupid and dangerous and violates all of the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Now, why is it that John Boehner and the president and all these other folks on Capitol Hill almost never raise the issue of the 9/11 Commission report? Why aren't they saying, wait a minute, the 9/11 Commission report said that for the terrorists to attack us, they had to enter the United States. And the way that they were able to hide in plain sight was to commit visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. And once they filed an application for an immigration benefit, they were basically home free. Why does nobody talk about that? I mean, you have a couple people that will talk about it, Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Chuck Grassley, my friend Lou Barletta. There are a few people who will talk about it, Steve King. But most of these people want to make believe there was no 9/11 Commission report. And I can't get the images out of my head, ladies and gentlemen. In the days, weeks, and months after 9/11, how many of those yo-yos on Capitol Hill saw cameras? See, it wasn't only Chuck Schumer that runs to be in front of the camera. Don't ever get between Chuck and a camera. He'll trample you. But it's not just the cameras. It was the microphones. And they're all standing there, and they're saying, why didn't they connect the dots? Why didn't they connect the dots? Why didn't they connect the dots? Well, the 9/11 Commission was convened to connect the dots. I was one of many, many, many people who provided testimony. We connected the dots. I've probably done, I think we're up to 16 congressional hearings. Many of them dealt with the nexus between immigration and national security. I certainly connected the dots, as did other witnesses that I sat next to at hearing after hearing after hearing, in the House, in the Senate. Everyone's connecting the dots. Everyone talks about immigration and terrorism, immigration and the drug gangs. And guess what? Nobody talks about the 9/11 Commission report. On December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor was attacked. The casualty count at Pearl Harbor was almost identical with the casualty count on 9/11. Pearl Harbor wasn't the state. On 9/11, the Twin Towers in New York City were reduced to rubble. Blocks from Wall Street, right in the middle of the financial district, in the heart of the city of New York, the Pentagon was hit. Headquarters for our military, hit by an airliner. I mean, goodness. It took 44 months to win the Second World War that followed the attack at Pearl Harbor. We were attacked in 1993 twice by Middle Eastern terrorists who committed visa fraud, who applied for asylum by committing fraud. You just had a terrorist attack up in Boston, Massachusetts. Lindsey Graham, Chuck Schumer, get up there. Oh, now we got to go full speed. Look at that terrible terrorist attack. This is why we need comprehensive reform. It's a lie. It's a lie. Their noses are growing. If you know plastic surgeons, give them the phone number. The reason that the Tsarnaev brothers were able to do what they did was because their family got political asylum, which means they had a credible fear that they could not return to their home countries, Russia. And as soon as they got lawful status, they hopped on airplanes and went back to Russia. Do you think maybe somebody lied? Nobody noticed, nobody cared, and nothing happened until April 15th, 2013, when those bombs went off and people died and other people's bodies were shredded. Shredded, legs lost, brain injuries, horrible, horrible damage inflicted by two dirtbags. And they were here because they were able, their family was able to apparently game the political asylum system. If you have a credible fear of going back to Russia and you tell our authorities, under no circumstances can I go back to my home country because such terrible things will happen to me, and then you give them lawful status and they hop on an airplane, why in the world did no one look into it? Because we've seen this happen before. So that broken, inept, incompetent, screwed up system is what Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham think can administer maybe 11 million, maybe 15 million, maybe 30 million. They don't know what the numbers are. In 1986, we were told that the Immigration Reform and Control Act would involve about 1 million illegal aliens, maybe 1.5 million. Well, by the time the bureaucratic dust settled, ladies and gentlemen, we found that we had processed more than 3.5 million. If the same ratio holds true now, that 11 to 12 million will quickly morph into somewhere between 35 and 40 million. 35 and 40 million. I mean, think of the numbers. Think of the amount of money that will be increasingly wired out of the United States. Think of all those people being dumped into a labor pool that can't find work now. Think of all those people getting identity documents without so much as a face-to-face interview or the capacity to do a field investigation. What could possibly go wrong? This is insane. They should call this thing what it is. I called comprehensive reform back in 2007, the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. You could almost call it the Suicide Pact today. This would destroy the middle class. It's exactly what Alan Greenspan wants. On April 30th, 2009, he testified before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee. Yes, Chuck again. There he goes. And he referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite earning too much money and said that the goal should be to greatly reduce inequality in wages. That's the American dream, folks. You know, when we hear inequality is bad, it is bad if it's about race. It is bad if it's about religion. It is bad if it's about ethnicity. And it is bad if it is about gender or age. But we are supposed to have inequality in wages when it involves skills and education. You don't expect a high school dropout to make the money that a guy with a PhD doing cancer research gets. wage inequality is what spurs people on to greatness. It's dangling that carrot. But Greenspan said, no, we have to reduce that wage inequality. And now, of course, the new war cry for this administration is wage equality. Wage equality. We're going to make everybody's salary equal. To each according to his needs, from each according to his ability. I thought that was called communism. And look, I'm not some right-wing guy. I'm not some conservative. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat, but I'm a labor guy. And this is about gutting the middle class. This is about the destruction of the middle class. This is about creating an oligarchy in the United States so that rather than Mexico becoming more like America, America, if Greenspan and Schumer and Lindsey Graham and these other bozos have their way, will be a lot more like Mexico. And Ted Cruz, the darling of the Tea Party, has called for five times as many H-1B visas to be issued. Right now, they issue 65,000. Comprehensive reform would have tripled that number, and Ted Cruz submitted Cruz 5, an amendment to the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill in the last Senate session that would have increased the H-1B visas by 500%. It's both sides of the aisle, a pox on both their houses, and you have John Boehner with that BS story that, goodness gracious, nobody believes. Nobody who hasn't got a flatline EEG believes that says they're going to be subjected to a rigorous background check. John Boehner, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, my simple question is, what do you call rigorous? How many people will be interviewed? How much time will they spend on each of those 30 million applications? 8 seconds? 20 seconds? 3 minutes? Rigorous? Really? Do we look that stupid? This is about the money that is being pumped into comprehensive reform. I just wrote an article for Accuracy in Media. I have another one that's out there right now. Social Contract just published it on the impact of the middle class. I have an article waiting publication over at Accuracy in Media. There is a program that was known as the Hackathon. What a great name. Run by Mr. Zuckerberg. Facebook. In your Facebook, I guess. In your face is what he's doing to us. Saying if you're an illegal alien, you could participate in the hackathon where they were going to mentor illegal aliens and teach them how to write computer code so they could use computers to lobby Congress and American people, that it would be fabulous for America for all those illegal aliens to get, you know, advanced degrees and high-paying jobs in America. Why aren't we doing that to help American kids? 1 in 4 American children are now living in poverty, ladies and gentlemen. And the greatest preponderance of those children living in poverty are American black and American Latinos. I mean, you want to talk about racism? So why in the world are we looking to bring in foreign students to staple degrees on their diplomas and ignoring the plight of America's poor? You know, you put a child in some horrific conditions, and as an agent, I was there, rats scurrying through the hall, rat droppings to be found everywhere, people sleeping and bugs climbing all over them. I can't tell you the crap that I saw. And if you're a child living in that kind of a building where the stench hits you before you walk through the door of the building, what would you be willing to do to get out of that kind of poverty? Go to bed hungry at night. What would you be willing to do to put food in your stomach? And very often, because there is no other alternative, these kids turn to crime. You will either educate these children or build more jails. And instead of saying, we're going to use the high-tech skills to get American kids up to speed so they get their slice of the American dream, God forbid. Instead of saying, let's provide training to battle-weary American soldiers who have protected this country. They've come back terrible shape, some of them. Post-traumatic stress, some of them missing body parts. They have literally, literally, folks, been through hell. Why aren't we offering these kinds of programs to them, Mr. Zuckerberg, in your face? So instead, what do we get? Oh, we'll do this for the illegal aliens. This is an insidious form of reverse xenophobia. Americans need not apply in their own country, and these people call themselves American entrepreneurs, and that's the other lie. Oh, if you bring in all those foreign workers, you'll get entrepreneurs. And yes, Elon Musk, great entrepreneur, brilliant Renaissance man, the founder of PayPal, the founder of SpaceX and Tesla. And you know what? The system worked. We gave him a green card. He's here. He came from South Africa through Canada. He's now living legally in the United States, and he is a credit to this country. And that's the kind of immigrant I'd love to see come through the front door. But 325,000 Ted Cruz? Really? Are we that stupid? I mean, listen, Gates, Zuckerberg, all of these knuckleheads were born in America. So this notion that Americans don't have what it takes is an insult. It's an insult. It's an in-your-face insult telling you that Americans in their own country are the least desirable people to be found. This is undermining America's success story for Americans. And it's remarkable that if you use the term alien with the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, they have a hissy fit. How dare you say alien? But do you know what the A in DREAM Act is? Alien minors. So suddenly the word alien becomes palatable. How outrageous is that? So we have a hackathon, which is a great term because it means to break into a computer. So you have Zuckerberg offering hackathon services along with a bunch of his colleagues and saying, well, if you're an illegal alien, we will bend over backwards. We will become human contortionists, human pretzels to help you. But if you're an American child living in poverty, just buy the garbage we sell. Just use the software that we've put out there so we could get rich off of you, but we will not do a darn thing to lift a finger to help American kids. One in four American children will probably go to bed hungry tonight. One in four. But we're being told that we're not being compassionate if we don't care about illegal aliens. No parent, no sane parent would give money to charity if his own children went to bed hungry at night. In fact, if you did that, I assure you that child welfare would come knocking on your door and take your kids from you, and they should. But somehow, when Americans stand up and say, wait a minute, why don't we take care of our own first, then we're being accused of being not compassionate, of being selfish. Really. This is about lowering the wages. Simple as that. This is why Gates and all these others who created forward.us, FWD.us, have pumped over $1.5 billion into this program of comprehensive reform. And you have politicians lining up to get those campaign contributions. And if you don't think they're being swayed, check for a pulse. Check for a pulse. I'd love to know who in their right mind thinks that it's appropriate to dump millions of authorized foreign workers into a labor pool and give them as much right to a job as an American who is losing his home to foreclosure. And everyone talks about, well, the other side is winning. You know, those of us that want border security, we're winning. And how do they know we're winning? Well, they haven't passed comprehensive reform. Whoopee-doo. I'm super impressed. Because each and every day, ladies and gentlemen, more illegal aliens are coming, and each and every day the administration does bupkis, does nothing about it. Now, there's another story where you've got the Obama administration being called the deporter-in-chief because they're saying, well, they're deporting all these people. What they're doing is altering the numbers just like they did with the unemployment statistics. Lamar Smith, who used to be the chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, then he was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee on March 3rd, he pinned down Jay Johnson at a Homeland Security hearing, and he nailed him and said, why in the world are you changing the way you count removals from the United States? You are including aliens who are being turned around by the Border Patrol or aliens who are being turned around at international airports and other ports of entry when the inspectors tell them, no, we're not going to let you in. That was never counted as a removal or a deportation. Not under the Clinton administration, not under the Bush administration, but it is under the Obama administration. It's like Hamburger Helper. It's about boosting the numbers to paint a false picture, just like when they added people going on Medicare and said that was part of Obamacare. Figures don't lie, but liars can figure. It's outrageous. And then they held two hearings over at the House Judiciary Committee, one on I think it was December 12th or December 13th, and another one in February about how the political asylum system has no integrity. On the one hand, they were talking about how political asylum has been used by members of the Mexican drug cartels in order to enter the United States as an embedding tactic, just the way the terrorists did. And, you know, Bob Goodlatte, chairman of the subcommittee, former immigration lawyer, he certainly understands that this system has no integrity, that there's no way you can have comprehensive reform without undermining America's national security. So it's terrific that the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee understands that there can be no integrity to this process. What I want to know is how he winds up voting if, God forbid, they try to vote this again. Because I'll be honest. I have a problem with all these folks, because if you have members of Congress who are not willing to pull out the 9/11 Commission report and start there and say, this is what we need to look at first, then I'm concerned. Then I'm very concerned. You know that thing about be scared, be very scared? It scares the hell out of me. And in fact, the Heritage Foundation, March 3rd, posted a report by Alyssa Tiberian and Ken McIntyre, and they entitled it, Lamar Smith to DHS Chief Obama, quote, inflates, unquote, deportation numbers, and there's a video clip of that statement, of that question and answer, that give and take between Smith and Jay Johnson, the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender. I mean, this is a problem that goes to the root of the lack of integrity to the immigration system. This is insane. And then the very next day, March 4th, Huffington Post posts an article. L.A. gang members claim to be fighting in the Syrian war. So now we suddenly have members of the Mexican mafia purportedly going to Syria and fighting on the side of Assad, fighting against the rebels, fighting against freedom. And they have access to our border. And we know that each and every week flights are going directly from Tehran, Iran, into Caracas, Venezuela. And on those flights are members of the CUDs, Iranian shock troops. We know that in the tri-border region of Brazil, training camps, Hezbollah funded and supported by Iran, Hamas, and probably Al-Qaeda in this hemisphere. So now we're finding out that members of the Mexican mafia, who no doubt have control of parts of our southwest border, are apparently been radicalized and are fighting on the side of Hezbollah in the Middle East. Does that not give you cause for pause? And yet, you see these debates about how secure is. Should the border be more secure, less secure? That border should be airtight, but the problem is it's not just the Mexican border. Again, it's a subterfuge. It's a subterfuge. The border exists wherever there is a coastline, wherever there's an international airport. We are a country of 50 border states, but you will never hear the immigration anarchists even want to begin to talk about the lack of integrity to the entire immigration system. Because if they did that, people would say, wait a minute, if you can't handle the workload you have now, why in the world would you increase it? That's what Ronald Reagan did. And people would say, oh, Ronald Reagan, he just didn't realize it. You know, he wanted to get tough. I'm sorry. Ronald Reagan did not want to get tough. He wanted to make the people that he was happy to help happier, the people that were looking for lots of cheap labor. That's what this is about. You know, there was a time when slavery was considered business as usual, immoral, despicable, disgusting. Don't know what more I can say about it. This is the modern version of slavery. This is about cheap, exploitable labor. And it's not just about illegal aliens doing manual jobs. It's about bringing people from India so they can undercut American workers working in the high-tech industries. This is about driving down the costs so that profitability can increase for all these companies, irrespective of the damage it does to America and Americans. These are not American companies. Most of them do everything that they possibly can to get out of paying taxes in the United States. They offshore. They do all kinds of crap. There's a company called Accenture. My understanding is that they are now going to be running the website for Obamacare. Accenture, you should know, is a spinoff of the Arthur Andersen Computer Company. Accenture, you should know, when they got the contract to run U.S. Visit, were given, from what I've read, over $1 billion, with a B, about a decade ago. They still can't track the departure of aliens. Why is that? because the number of visa waiver countries would be impacted, because one of the original requirements for a country to participate in this very wrong-headed and dangerous program was that their citizens could not have an overstay rate, I think, of more than 2 or 3%. I'd have to go back into the specifics of the law, but it was a very low number. And they also couldn't have a problem with visa refusal rates. Well, it's easy to mess with visa refusal rates. All that the State Department does is tell their consular officials, you better make sure you give these people visas. And they do. Visa refusal rates drop and everyone's happy. But you can't mess around with the overstay rates, because if someone overstays, they overstay. So I suspect, can't prove it, but I suspect that the trick here is to make damn sure that nobody knows. Don't ask, don't tell. So you spend a lot of money on a program that at the end of the day doesn't work for one reason or the other. And Accenture is an offshore company. When they got the contract, they were headquartered in Hamilton, Bermuda. Last time I checked, they were headquartered in Ireland. This is all about corporate America getting exactly what it wants where our government is concerned. And I laugh when the conservatives tell me, oh, you let corporations run stuff in America, it'll be a lot better than the government. Yeah, that's right. The role model is what? Enron, AIG, General Motors? What model are we talking about? This divide-and-conquer strategy of pitting American against American and ideology against ideology is only serving well the people who are in the top fraction of 1% of the food chain in the United States. The rest of us are being played for suckers. Barbara Jordan, African-American woman, she was a very liberal member of the Black Caucus in Washington, member of Congress, came up with something called the Jordan Commission Report back in the 90s, and her position on immigration and my position on immigration essentially march lockstep, because she understood the damage being done to America and Americans by not securing the borders and effectively enforcing the immigration laws. This is not a conservative issue, and it's not a liberal issue. It's an American issue. If you do a survey of our men and women in the armed forces, I can assure you that you will find Democrats as well as Republicans. The same thing can be said about the ranks of America's federal law enforcement agents. Some of my friends were Republican and some of my friends were Democrats, and we all went out there and tried to do our best on behalf of America. Artificial divide is about divide and conquer. And so then we add to the mix people coming here from other countries that don't speak a common language, that's more divisive and more opportunities for the bad guys who run the show to conquer us by getting their way. A couple of years ago, there was a whole big story about how in the Korean community in Queens, there were businesses that refused to put American numbers or English signs and the English numbers on their establishments. And the police department and the emergency services, you know, the ambulances, the fire department said, you can't do that. If we get a phone call, 911, there's a fire, a heart attack, a robbery, something, we need to know where to go. We can't figure it out. And one of the leaders of the Korean Businessmen Association said, we don't care that you can't figure it out. We don't even want people to come here who aren't Korean. Imagine if someone else said something like that. And then there was a story that was just sent to me by one of the 9/11 family members whose son-in-law was killed on 9/11, about how if you go into parts of Brooklyn, you have people from Bangladesh that are still settling scores by beheading each other, who don't want to be part of America, who don't want to speak the language. This isn't about assimilation. We are creating within our own country a Tower of Babel with the consent of members of Congress from both sides of the aisle. This is anti-American. It's anti-American that there are sanctuary cities in America that gloss over immigration law violations and the federal government does nothing about it. This is about thumbing their noses at the American citizens, thumbing their noses or maybe waving a finger, flipping the bird, to the Constitution of this great nation. And I don't care if you're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. All too many of these folks seem more concerned with campaign contributions and votes. Primaries are coming. And I'm going to tell you something. Any member of the United States Senate who's going to have to be involved in a primary, here's what I would recommend to those of you who live in the state of such a senator. Get a hold of the people who are running against them. any member of the Senate who voted for S-744, S as in Sam, S as in Senate, 744, comprehensive reform, took a disloyalty oath to America and Americans. They have gone on paper as favoring providing millions upon millions of foreign workers with an equal standing in the labor pool with unemployed Americans. They've gone on record as supporting tripling the number of high-tech workers who could compete with American workers who can't find jobs. You know, we're being told that there's a shortage of high-tech graduates. Well, according to one study, the unemployment rate for American students who have the necessary degrees in computer sciences and so forth stands at more than 14%. I think it was 14.7% recently. That is well over double the standard unemployment or the unemployment rate for the average American worker. These are people who spent a ton of money and invested lots of their time out of their lives to get those degrees, and they're still not able to get jobs in their industries. Right now, from what I've seen, one in three jobs goes to foreign workers coming into the United States instead of this all going to Americans. We are destroying the ability of American students to get jobs in industries for which they have been exquisitely trained for. Anybody who voted for S-744 voted in favor of all of that. They said, the hell with you, American worker. The hell with you, American students. We'd rather get foreign people in because we know that they will take less money, and that will make the people who are lobbying us like crazy happy, and we want to make those lobbyists happy. We want to make those industries happy that want cheap, compliant labor. That's what this is about. And any member of the House of Representatives who has expressed support for comprehensive reform is vulnerable. Vulnerable. Vote them out. They told you where they stand. They don't stand with the American middle class. They don't stand with America's working poor. They do not stand for national security. If you can't secure your borders, and if you can't weed out the people inside your country who got past the Border Patrol, I mean, let's face it. It's easy to get past the Border Patrol if you're willing to get arrested a half dozen times. And by the way, the administration has just added yet another country to the visa waiver list. We're now up to 38. It was 26 on 9/11. This is about the Chamber of Commerce. This is about dismantling America's borders. And if you really want to have a debate about whether or not the border is secure, here's the simple solution, folks. Forget about those BS arrest statistics that are as doctored as you could possibly imagine. Those numbers aren't worth your time to read them. Look at the price and availability of narcotics in the United States. The price of narcotics is not going anywhere but down. If you look at supply and demand, the only way that those drugs could go down in price is if our borders are not secure, because heroin and cocaine, every single last molecule of that rat poison comes here from outside the United States and is smuggled in. Every gram of those drugs represents a failure at border security. The same border that provides access for the illegal aliens provides access for the drugs. This is what you're not going to hear on the mainstream media. This is not what you're going to hear from Chucky Schumer, what you're going to hear from Lindsey Graham. You'll hear these fairy tales because they have an agenda. And when we hear this need for farm workers, okay, you know what? Mexican farmers right now in one day can apply for a farm worker visa to come to the United States. There is a process in place. Do we need to make it more streamlined? I don't know. Maybe they should take a look at that. But if you're not going to police that system, it doesn't matter, because then people that want to come to America to do whatever they want to do will simply get a visa to work at a farm and never show up. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, I wound up working with the New York City Police Department, ATF, and the Office of Naval Intelligence, which is now NIS, the Naval Investigative Service, because we had they became illegal aliens from Jamaica, Panama, the Caribbean, Trinidad, Tobago, St. Lucia. And what were they doing? They got visas to work on farms. The citrus groves of Florida, the apple orchards of upstate New York, They never went to the farm. They got involved with different crops, marijuana at first and then cocaine, and the level of violence was horrendous. We were literally following a trail of dead bodies, and they had been admitted with farm visas. If you really want to bring in farm workers, hire enough agents to police the system so that if these folks don't go to work on the farm or quit that job, you hunt them down and you deport them because they're being admitted for a purpose, the purpose being to work on farms. What a radical thought. Make certain that those visas mean something. You know, if you don't think that it's a big deal that aliens run the border, then why in the world do we bother spending a ton of money inspecting passengers that arrive on international flights? If you really think that the border is not a big deal, then there is no reason for this country to spend God knows how many billions and billions of dollars each and every year employing Border Patrol agents, customs inspectors, customs and, you know, CBP, customs and border agents to work at the airports, which is how I began my career. Because if it doesn't matter that people run the border, then there should be no reason to inspect anybody. You know, it's kind of like putting up a door in an empty field with no walls around the house and saying, you got to go through the door. Why? Why should I wait online to go through the door and I can just walk around the door? And that's really what we're talking about. If you don't think that it's a big deal to run the border, then let's stop the charade. Let's just let airplanes come here from every country on the planet, whether it's a country from the Middle East, whether it's a country from Asia, Europe, Africa, Caribbean, I don't care where, and say, okay, come on in. The plane will land. They'll pull up to a gate next to the domestic arrivals, pick up your suitcase. The only person you have to talk to is the cab driver that takes you wherever you're going. Would that make any sense? And if your answer is that that would be crazy, then I want you to think about what they're telling you about the unknown millions of illegal aliens who ran the borders, and now we're going to give them an identity document even though we can't prove who they are. Is anybody thinking? Does anybody understand the danger that this creates for all of us? When John Boehner starts talking about comprehensive reform and doesn't say anything about the 9/11 Commission, he needs to face a serious contender in that primary. Either you're with us or you're against us. John Boehner, you're Speaker of the House. You're a leader in Congress. It's time to be a leader. It's time to stand up and say, okay, you know what? Americans come first in their own country. I believe it's American Express that had this great slogan, you know, membership has its rewards. Don't you folks think that citizenship should have its rewards, that the government should be looking out for the safety and well-being of every American? You know, I know conservatives and liberals have different ideas about what the role for government is, but I know one role that I think we would all agree with, and that's to shield America and Americans from our enemies, from terrorists, from spies, from people with dangerous diseases, from people who would destroy the middle class. Any arguments? What we've just described is the purpose of our immigration laws. When you have the Speaker of the House not addressing the real damage that would be done by comprehensive reform, I want to know what he's doing. I want to know what it is he's doing. I want to know what the destination is for this country that he has in mind. There's nothing racist about those immigration laws, just common sense. You're not antisocial if you look through the peephole before you admit a stranger into your home. In fact, that's why they give you a peephole on your front door with a doorbell. That's why knock-knock jokes are understood around the world. Different language, but the concept of the knock-knock joke, everybody gets it, because normally people understand they have to seek permission to enter into someone's premises. Mayor Bloomberg was an interesting character, and boy, oh boy, I don't mean it in a good way. This was a guy who held news conference after news conference screaming about how the prosecutors in the Bronx were refusing to prosecute those folks who trespassed into public housing. And he said, you know what? If you trespass into public housing, you're up to no good. People want those people to be stopped and ask them, who are you and why are you here? And you know what's so remarkable, folks? That's the kind of question that I used to ask when I sat in that booth at Kennedy Airport in New York City back in the early 1970s. You would ask the alien, what's your name? Who are you? Why are you here? How long are you planning to stay? And so forth. So Bloomberg gets it. Trespass on public housing, he wants you in jail. Do not collect $200 right to jail. But when you trespass on America, Mayor Bloomberg wants to give you the keys to the city. The disconnect is mind-boggling. And no one ever questions him about it. The journalists generally don't ask people when they say comprehensive reform would be great for the economy. How? How would it be great for the economy? How would sending more money out of the country be better? How would undercutting American wages be better for America or Americans? No one asks. When they say that those of us, such as myself, that want the laws enforced, we get accused of being anti-immigrant, why doesn't someone stand up and say, wait a minute, they just want the laws enforced? Those are the same laws that provide for the lawful immigration of over a million immigrants into the United States every year. Those laws give and those laws take. They do both. It's balance. There is true balance in those immigration laws, and we can tweak them a bit and we can fine-tune them a bit, but if those laws really worked, they would do what they're supposed to do, and that's to protect the lives and jobs of Americans. But you've got John Boehner saying, don't worry, this isn't amnesty. No, it's not an amnesty, it's a catastrophe. Comprehensive reform would not be an amnesty, but a catastrophe if you don't want to use the word amnesty. And of course, I think it's an amnesty, because the goal for these folks who come here is to be able to work. They don't care about citizenship. You know, that's really what the bottom line is. They come to work. And that's the bottom line. When you do surveys, they will tell you, I don't care about citizenship, I just want to be able to work. So it's all these false arguments. So are these politicians that dumb, or are they hoping that we're that dumb? Food for thought for the weekend. You know, it's always terrific joining you at the end of the week. I'm going to remind you again, folks, please, go to capsweb.org. We got some really great articles up on the website. Very much worth your time to visit the site, look at some of the ads. They really put an awful lot of time, effort into this thing because we understand the dangers that we face because we are not doing what we're supposed to do to protect this country and to protect our citizens. Because at the end of the day, that is the mission that our government is responsible for. I also want you to go to my own website, michaelcutler.net, and I look forward to seeing all of you again same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour next week. Have a great weekend. Don't forget to set those clocks ahead, and if you look a little droopy-eyed, at least for the first couple days next week, we'll all know what's going on. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.